I'm Desiree Moses for WNRN, broadcasting from the Blue Ridge to the Bay, joining you from backstage at the Paramount Theater in Charlottesville. It's an absolute honor to be speaking with Lucinda Williams. Lucinda, thank you so much for taking the time.
Of course.
You've been a prolific songwriter for nearly four decades. You've been nominated for 17 Grammys and won three of them. And even though you come from a literary family, your dad was a poet and a professor, you hadn't written a book until now. Your memoir is titled Don't Tell Anybody the Secrets I Told You, which takes its name from a lyric on the track Metal Firecracker off your seminal album Car Wheels on a Gravel Road. Lucinda, I'm curious, how different was your approach to writing your memoir compared to songwriting?
It's different because, you know, more people are maybe going to read it, and it's just a whole different animal than songwriting.
Were there themes that you sought to tackle in the memoir that you hadn't necessarily written about through your songwriting?
Although I did start talking about it openly in some of my shows, but my mother's struggle with mental illness, I hadn't really opened up about that completely, but I wrote about it in the book.
I listened to another interview you did, and you said you didn't necessarily know where to start, and so you started by journaling every night, and you started just writing things down.
Yeah.
Were there certain authors that you turned to for help, or maybe other artists who had already written a memoir to get some tips?
Yeah, the journaling every night thing was actually suggested to me by another published writer, Nicholas Davidoff. He told me to get some notebooks and every single night write anything, you know, just to train my brain to start writing. But the problem was that I'd never written a book before, any kind of book. I know how to write songs. I know what the ins and outs of songwriting involve, but writing a book, I didn't really know, you know, like, how do I know if this is good or if this reads well? And
on stage tonight, you spoke about your dad, and you spoke about how he was a mentor to you, and sometimes when you were songwriting, you would show him some lyrics and sometimes accept some constructive criticism. Was there anybody that you turned to when you were writing your memoir and showed them some pages?
That's exactly what a big problem, part of the problem was, that my dad wasn't around, you know, for me to go to. And I was so used to leaning on him, you know, anytime I was writing anything, because he was just so good at it, and I didn't have him there, so that was a big issue for me, because I wanted him to see it, and I wanted to have his approval.
Well, would you say that what you ended up with, you think he would approve of? You got to that point?
I think so, yeah.
Yeah. Well, I wanted to ask you, too, again, you did speak a lot about your dad on stage tonight, and he was a prolific poet. I'm curious, growing up in that environment where language and creativity is at the forefront, what were some lessons that you took from him and sort of channeled into your own creative process once you began songwriting?
Yeah. Well, one of the most important messages, that's a good question, by the way. One of the most important messages I got from him as far as being a writer was he said one time, he told me, he said, never censor yourself. And also just, you know, you can write about anything. The subject matter doesn't have to be about unrequited love all the time. He wrote poems about, it could be a cat sleeping on the windowsill or a wreck on the highway that he passed. So I learned a lot about that. And the economics of writing also, it's kind of trim the fat.
I love the fact that you've often said, I don't want to just write about unrequited love, and you haven't.
Yeah.
You've cited writers like Flannery O'Connor, for instance, as an influence. Can you talk about the impact of Southern Gothic as sort of a literary tradition?
Yeah, I was highly influenced by Southern writers, like Flannery O'Connor being the biggest one for me. And my dad was friends with her. He told me once that she was his greatest teacher. So she was kind of like a mentor for him. And they would visit and talk about writing and everything. She lived in Milledgeville, Georgia. She invited him to her home there one time, and he took me with him to go visit her. I was pretty young. You know, she raised peacocks. And my dad told me that I just chased her peacocks around the yard and acted like a five-year-old.
I'm speaking with Lucinda Williams backstage after her show at the Paramount Theater in Charlottesville. Let's take a listen to a live performance from her set.
Where the Song Will Find Me. And it's basically about song, the beauty and power of songs and songwriting, and being at the right place at the right time for the muse to hit.
Play.
For WNRN, I'm Desiree Moses, revisiting my conversation with Lucinda Williams backstage at the Paramount Theater in Charlottesville after her show last month. Let's get back into our conversation. Lucinda, your new album is called Stories from a Rock and Roll Heart. It's your 16th studio record, but it's the first time that you share co-writing credit with your husband. I'm curious, why this record?
You know, it was time to write some new songs, and I had some that I was already kind of fiddling and messing with, and I didn't realize that my husband, Tom, had actually been a writer and interested in writing for a long time. Turns out he was pretty doggone good, you know? Like, I would be working on something, and he would write some stuff down and come up, and he was kind of shy about it at first. You know, but he'd hand it to me and I'd look at it and it would be good, you know, and I was surprised at first. Then it got to the point where he would write down a whole page of lyrics. And he would come up with an idea for a song and just hand me the lyrics, and I would take them and figure out a melody and arrange it and everything. And we kind of got on a roll like that.
When it comes to figuring out who else you're going to collaborate with, so Bruce Springsteen seems like a no-brainer, but how do you decide, oh, hey, this song seems like a fit for Bruce when you're starting to tap collaborators?
I remember we were sitting around working on that song, and Tom, who's my husband and manager and also co-producer and co-writer, he was the one who first said, wouldn't it be great if we could get Bruce to sing on this song? And the other person who was collaborating with us at the time was Jesse Malin. They all call him the unofficial mayor of the East Village, you know, because he knows everyone. And so Jesse pops up and says, well, let me see what I can do. I think I can probably reach out to Bruce's people. He did. Lo and behold, by the sheer luck or the grace of God, we heard back from not only Bruce, but his wife, Patty Schiaffa, who also added some vocals, and they worked really hard. We didn't tell them what to do or how to sing it or anything. We just sent them the track, and they went into a studio where they live and overdubbed some background vocals. And it still thrills me to this day every time I hear Bruce's voice on, you know, just pop out on that track. I'm just like,
I'm Desiree Moses. We're revisiting my conversation with Lucinda after her show at the Paramount Theater in Charlottesville last month. Let's get back into our chat.
You know, you picked up guitar when you were young, but I'm curious about when you found your voice, and you can interpret that as, in the literal sense of the word, your physical voice, or lyrically, how did you find your voice in terms of what you really wanted to say?
You know, I was really influenced by Bob Dylan. I loved his music. His lyrics really spoke to me, and when they were so much like poetry. I loved the idea of, you know, having these poetic lyrics backed up with, you know, this kind of rock music or folk rock. I guess that's what he was doing back then, mixing folk and rock. I loved the blend of that. So somewhere in my little 12-year-old mind, when I was first starting to learn guitar and everything, you know, I set the bar pretty high, but I wanted to be able to write songs like that. Well, I mean, I was, you know, surrounded by all these great writers.
Yes.
Besides my dad, good friends of his who were, you know, iconic authors. But yeah, Bob Dylan and Leonard Cohen was another one. And I'd listen to their songs and just think, oh, I want to learn how to do that.
We're speaking with Lucinda Williams on WNRN backstage after her show at the Paramount Theater in Charlottesville. Let's take a listen to more live material from her set.
Wrote for my younger brother, Robert, who was 4 years younger and a little bit of a rascal. He was smart as a whip. Very creative and talented and all of that, but he would disappear for days and weeks and months at a time, go stay at a friend's house, and we wouldn't know where he was or when or if he was coming back home. And then he would show up like the prodigal son, and of course we all loved him to pieces. I wrote this song for him called Little Angel, Little Brother. Thank you. music books, your sense of humor, and your rugged good looks. I see you now at the piano. Your back, a slow curve, playing retros and Fats Domino. I sang all the words. Little angel, little brother, your bad habits and your attitude, your restless ways and your solitude. I see you leaning your blanky frame the door, a figure behind the kitchen screen, staring down at the floor. Little angel, little brother,
live, Lucinda Williams on WNRN, recorded during her show at the Paramount Theater in Charlottesville on November 20th. I'm Desiree Moses. I got the chance to speak with Lucinda Williams backstage after her show that evening. Let's get back into our conversation.
Well, and you've spoken a lot, too, and you touched on it on stage tonight as well, about some of the pushback that you received in the industry, not only being a woman, but also, you know, towing the line of genre. Us as fans and maybe as programmers see you as sort of a renegade, and that you really opened a lot of doors for other female artists who were coming up, and especially in the genre of what we now call Americana.
Right.
I don't know if you viewed your position in that way, but I'm curious now, are there any other acts coming up that you're excited about right
now? Yeah, there are, and that's a great thing to point out. And I'm flattered, you know, that I'm seen as a renegade. I love that.
Even the idea of, I'm not just going to write about unrequited love. I'm surmising, I don't know for sure, but I'm sure that there were expectations of you as a woman in the industry about, why aren't you writing about those things? And you should write about that. That will sell. Yeah. That will be a hit.
And the thing is, when I first started out, probably the biggest pushback, like you said, was more, had more to do with what style of music I was going to do, or what they were, you know, I remind the audience a lot of times when I play that they call it the music business for a reason. It's a marketing issue. The artist is the product, and they have to market the product. And if they don't know if it's country or rock or whatever it is, you know, they don't know how to market it unless it has a name. And that's where Americana, that was why that was so helpful when that came in, because there were other artists like myself also who were getting, you know, falling in the cracks because the record labels, they weren't getting signed. And I mean, it took me forever to get a record deal just because of that. It's that whole business part of it where all the marketing people sit down and go, okay, well, we've got this artist here and people seem to really like her, but, you know, what do we call it? What are we going to do with it? How are we going to promote it? You know, it's all about that. And lo and behold, here comes the idea for Americana. That was about creating a market for this kind of music. That's basically what that was, you know. Like, we need a market for what this is. Nobody knows what to call it. It falls in the cracks between country and rock. Hey, I know, let's call it Americana. Okay, whatever they want to call it, it's fine. You know, just, I mean, I go out, I have my fans, and I do my shows, and they come to see me, and they buy my records, so that's all you can ask.
You've recorded the 7th volume of your Lose Jukebox series called Lucinda Williams Sings the Beatles from Abbey Road. So you're the first major artist to record Beatles songs at Abbey Road Studios since the Beatles themselves. What do you want to share with us about this project?
Yeah, the Beatles idea, that was, again, my husband manager Tom's idea. And it came on the heels of this project we'd been doing called Lose Jukebox, where I would pick a favorite artist and my favorite songs of that artist, go in with my band, record it, videotape the sessions at the studios, and then we'd live stream it and we'd release it as an album. And people seemed to really enjoy it. So, you know, we were talking about, okay, what's the next Lose Jukebox record going to be? And we'd done a Stones one, we'd done a Bob Dylan one, a Tom Petty one, and Tom said, the Beatles, we need to do the Beatles, and we were going to be in London anyway doing a couple of shows. So he said, I think we should go into Abbey Road Studios and record Beatles songs.
Was the juju there in Abbey Road? How cool was that?
It was there, but it was a little intimidating at the same time because, you know, what it was. I felt like it was kind of like the Holy Grail almost,
right.
You know, like...
Yeah.
I didn't want to touch anything or mess anything up, you know, but they have some rules there. Like, you can't just walk in, you know, you have to know the right person to talk to book some studio time. Our engineer, Ray Kennedy, who's a Beatles fanatic, managed to find out who to talk to at the studio, and, you know, they were real nice. At first they didn't know who I was, though, when we tried to book the time. They weren't familiar with me. But then we got the right person, and yeah, it was a little intimidating, actually. I didn't want it to sound like we were a cover band doing Beatles, you know.
Right, right.
So, you know, and I was like, well, how are we going to avoid that? You know, my band is great, but still, we have to play the songs the way they were written, you know. So how are we going to get around that and have it sound original enough and interesting enough? The feedback I've gotten has been real positive.
Yeah, say we've enjoyed what we've heard so far and looking forward to the full release. Lucinda Williams live on WNRN, and thank you so much for taking the time to chat with me.
You're welcome. I have to stand up for this one. And I have to do my herbal throat spray stuff. Singer's soothing throat spray, professional strength. Just so you don't think it's an illicit drug or anything. It actually helps. You can get it over the counter probably at most natural food places. Bless their hearts, they have to put up with me. Brady's father is a Methodist preacher, too. This is called Fruits of My Labor. Velvet curtains on the windows too. Keep the bright and unforgiving light from shining through. Baby, I remember all the things we did when we slept together in the blue behind your eyelids, baby. Sweet baby. Found these purple flowers. I was spent, I was soon smelling you for hours. Lavender, lotus blossoms too. Water the dirt, flowers last for you, baby. Sweet baby. And sugar cane, grapes and honeydew melon, enough fit for a queen. Lemon trees don't make a sound till branches bend and fruit falls to the ground, baby. Sweet baby. Come to my world and witness the way things have changed. 'Cause I finally did it, baby. I got out of the Grange, got my Mercury and drove out west. Pedal to the metal and my love to the test, baby. Sweet baby. I've been trying to enjoy all the fruits of my labor. I've been crying for you, boy, but truth is my savior. Sweet baby, if it's all the same, I'd take the glory any day over the fame, baby. Sweet baby. I've been trying to enjoy all the fruits of my labor. I've been crying for you, boy, but truth is my savior. Baby, if it's all the same, I'd take the glory any day over the fame, baby.
really good one.